From the campus of Stanford University, this is Schools In.
They believe that what we're being told is everything they need to know, and they just pay attention to that.
You actually have to teach the teachers how to teach for innovation.
With your hosts, Dan Schwartz and Denise Pope.
Welcome to Schools In. I'm Denise Pope, senior lecturer here at the Graduate School of Education at Stanford, and I am with my co-host, Dan Schwartz, who is the dean of the Graduate School of Education.
So someday I'd like to be introduced as something other than the dean. Can I?
We could do that. What would you like to be introduced as?
Well, I was thinking of what other nations might say. Supreme leader.
Emperor.
Emperor. Yeah, that'd be okay.
Sure. You're my boss. I will do what you tell me to do.
Yeah, that'll be the day. That will be the day. So today we're talking about comparative education across different nations. And there's a common finding. They do international tests where sort of every nation takes the same test. And I don't know why people want to rank their nation against others. I can guess. But there's this interesting finding that shows up over and over, which is take science. One of the nations that has the highest test scores on science ranks 47th out of 47 in interest in science. So in general, there's this negative correlation that nations that are doing very well on these tests are – the students are the least interested in the subjects. So you got a theory for that one?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I think they're sick of it by the time they do. I think if you're going to be that high – this is just a hypothesis. I have no data on this. But here's my guess. They have probably crammed that science into those kids' heads from the minute they were born, and they do it in a sort of a joyless way, and they are just ready, you know, like, get me the heck out of here. Give me anything but science.
So it's basically 12 years of test prep.
Yeah, maybe. I mean, that could be a reason, right? I think also here's another thought. If your country is that high in science, maybe you're not allowing them to see other subjects in a way that's exciting. You're not giving time to those other subjects. And so they there's this sort of hidden allure, like, wait, what are they not telling us? Oh, yeah. Poetry. Oh, maybe this is my escape and I'm going to go look at poetry. I don't know. I'm just making this up.
I have no idea. So
it's
not just science. It's also math, the same thing.
Ah.
So it's kind of a mystery.
Yeah. You know,
I like the hypothesis that so much concern about the assessments that you're sort of forgetting about the whole child and the joy of discovery and things like that.
Sucking it out of them.
But I don't know. It's a very common pattern.
But you said something interesting. You said, I don't know why a country would want to know how they rank.
So we're meeting with an expert, our expert who is going to help us understand this. So today we're talking with Professor Martin Carnoy. He's the Vita Jacks Professor of Education at the Stanford Graduate School of Education. Martin is a labor economist, and he studies how educational systems work, and he's done research that looks at international testing, public and private schools, and effective school reform policies. He's actually studied like everything. So there's a common – Martin produces a book a year, basically, of great scholarship, and nobody knows how this is possible. Some of us theorize because he does international, means he's flying a lot. So he has nothing else to do but write on a plane. So anyway, so Martin is an expert on understanding how countries are ranked in education. And welcome, Martin. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you, both of you.
So let me just ask, before we get into some of the science, why do nations want to be on international tests? Because they think they're going to be number one? Like, I'm some poor country. It's clear I'm going to be at the bottom. Why do I want to be part of this test?
Well, it's a complicated process because first of all, they get a lot of incentives from international agencies to take these tests, including foreign aid if they do it, and a lot of conditioned assistance.
I didn't know that.
One of our doctoral students did a study on this. Very interesting. So, yes, there's been pressure by the World Bank and, of course, by the test givers, particularly OECD, to get more and more countries to take these tests. Now, the reasoning behind it is that you've got to know, even if you score low, it would be good to know how your kids are doing. These are benchmark tests, how your kids are doing vis-a-vis the rest of the world. So, for example, there's a small municipality in northeast Brazil, which has scores very high compared to the rest of Brazil on the national test. And they have somehow convinced themselves that they want to do what's called the PISA school test, which is the OECD has a test for schools. If you have 75 or more kids with 15-year-olds in a school, you can get statistically significant results taking this test. So they're having their schools, their high schools, take this test.
So they can have bragging rights.
No, they can compare themselves. They know they're really high in Brazil, so now they want to know how they are vis-a-vis Portugal, for example. So there's a lot of this, you know, how does my team rank compared to other teams? And I think there's a lot of interest in that. It wasn't the main reason why these tests were started. They were started to gather data on comparing countries. And in fact, the framers of these original tests back in the 60s were really warned about not doing these country comparisons. They said, don't do this. You know, what we're really trying to find out is why some educational systems are different from others, and we want to use these tests to try to figure this out. Well, that's been lost in all the publicity.
People always say that. Don't compare. We're not using this to compare you to others. But that's how every person looks at a test.
So I look at tests like that, and I only care if I'm number one. If I'm not, I don't care about the test, and it's a stupid test.
If you're not number one, it's a stupid test.
Yes.
Yeah, I get it. Okay.
If I'm number one, it's not a
stupid
test. It's
the best test in the world.
It's the test of Dan Schwartzness. So should I worry that the U.S. is lower than other nations on these international tests?
Well, I was on a panel with the guy who runs the OECD test, Andreas Schleicher. I was on a panel with him last year. And it was in Russia, and he has these amazing slides, which in this case were even translated into Russian. And he has a 40-minute shtick that he does, and it's very impressive. Well, he got to the last couple of slides, and one of these slides, Russia scores higher now on the PISA in math and science than does the U.S. Not that much higher, but higher. Then he showed this chart where the U.S. had this very high productivity, labor productivity, and Russia was way down. It's very similar to the interest in science. And he said, well, Russia's got a productivity problem. So I was completely out of my mind. I said, who would show a slide like this if you're trying to push these tests? And so
Because it shows that the test is not predicting productivity, which is what the nation cares about.
That's right. Yeah. And so when it was my turn to speak, I said, you have just seen an amazing slide in which the purveyor of the test is telling you that the test has very little, that Russia's got a productivity problem, not a quality of education problem.
This is Schools In with Dan Schwartz and Denise Pope. We're speaking with Martin Carney, who's a labor economist here at the School of Education, talking about tests that compare countries and how well they're doing or how not well they're doing.
So to follow up on the irony theme. So you're an international economist or comparer, but you've made the claim that we shouldn't compare ourselves to other nations. We should compare the states.
Right.
Would you say more?
Yes. You know, there are countries like ours are federal countries. In fact, juridically, the control of the education system is in the hands of the states, not in the hands of the nation. Now, this varies from country to country, even big federal countries. In some of them, the national government has a lot of influence over what goes on in education. But in ours, for example, it has very little to do with it. And we have Title I, which subsidizes low-income, low-scoring kids. But aside from that, there's some leverage. You know, during the Bush administration, they had the No Child Left Behind, and they got everybody to take tests. Pushed accountability. So there's that kind of leverage. But in general, states vary enormously in how they run the educational systems. We know that. And so it makes little sense to say, well, how does Finland compare with the United States? Finland's a country of 5 million people compared to a country of 330 million, wherever we are. And we have this tremendous variation within the country. So what I suggested is that what we should do is look at state performance and start to compare with states, because first of all, Americans are much more like Americans than they are like Finns, number one. And secondly, state policies vary in ways that are just American kind of state variation, American policy variation. So it's really useful to do that. So, for example, Massachusetts, compared to its neighbor Connecticut, made enormous gains on our national test between 2003 and 2013 in math. So by 2013, even though they'd started pretty much exactly the same on the 2003 national assessment test, they ended up a half a standard deviation ahead by 2013. Now, that's an enormous gain in 10 years. And so what it would be much more useful to try to understand what Massachusetts did compared to Connecticut in math rather than trying to compare ourselves to Finland. By the way, Massachusetts' score is about as high as Finland on the international test because Massachusetts took to PISA, so did Finland. So Alabama, at the other extreme, does very badly and has not made very big gains. And we might want to understand why Alabama's making – I mean – it's not so good to compare Alabama with Massachusetts, but it would be good to compare Alabama with Georgia, for example, next door, which has done much, much better than Alabama. So these kind of comparisons are actually useful to try to do policy. And it's one of the positive things about looking at tests over time to try to begin to understand. Unfortunately, these international tests are not very useful for giving us policy implications.
I see.
I mean, so that's a question that I have because, you know, immediately I hear Russia does better than us and I'm like, there's something inside of me that just went, wah, you know, like, wait a minute. That makes me very worried. But I think when Dan, you're rubbing off on me a little bit. But a part of that is not like I want to be better than Russia. A part of that is, wait a minute, I think of the United States as wanting to learn from the tests. And if the tests are bad or not useful, right? So what makes the PISA or the TIMSS, which is another international test, better than the test that we give in California or Massachusetts or Alabama? What's so great about these tests?
Well, the TIMSS is actually linked to our National Assessment of Educational Progress test, which in some cases are linked to the state tests. So the TIMSS is a curriculum-based test. The PISA is much more sort of general, is a knowledge test. It says, what should kids know for the 21st century labor market? It's a very abstract notion. It's correlated with the TIMSS. I mean, all these tests are correlated. But the problem, look, people go into the tests and there are lots of problems with the tests. But the real problem is that people draw policy implications for the differences between country X and country Y. And the tests are just not organized to get at these policy differences. I mean, it's nice to say, oh, Finland has great teacher preparation. And we know teacher preparation is important to have better schools. We know that. But, you know, I asked Pasi Sahlberg, who's sort of the guru on Finnish education, I said, if you take a Finnish teacher and stick her in Indianapolis, Indiana, do you think the test scores are going to go up? And he said, no, he doesn't think so. So it's that kind of thing, you know. I mean, you can point at policies and say, oh, this – you can look at high-scoring countries and say, do what they do. I mean, Dan visited Singapore lately. And he said, do what they do. Well, first of all, you got 5 million Chinese plus some Malaysians, I guess, and Indians there. I don't even know if they even take the test, those groups. But you got these 5 million Chinese with their cultural habits and their views toward education and their cram courses. They take it. Well, you can't tell whether it's really the Singapore schools are better or whether there's something about Singapore society or whether there's something about these cram courses. All this stuff is mixed in. And the trouble with these OECD and these other people who dwell on these test differences is that they jump to these conclusions when we have no evidence that what they're talking about really causes these differences.
This is Schools In with Dan Schwartz and Denise Pope. We're talking with Martin Carnoy, about comparing countries using these standardized tests.
Professor Martin Carnoy. The Vita Jacks Professor of Education, Martin Carnoy.
So I'm hearing that these tests are not all that they're cracked up to be.
But I think it's a specific argument. The problem is the tests are only measuring the outcomes in the students. They're not measuring any of the structure, which is where you would have to make your interventions. Like, is there a PISA test that looks at the structure of the school?
There are questionnaires that look at the structure of the school, but these are principal questionnaires. And you're relying on principals' opinions on,
Self-report.
Yeah, their self-report. And one of the questions, for example, that's been used by analysts is the one whether how much control do you have over what goes on in your school is a measure of decentralization. Well,
I'm the principal. I have total control over what goes on in my school.
It's a variable with a lot of error. Right? So you are relying on this. And in fact, a PISA test doesn't even give a questionnaire to the teachers. I think they might be doing that in 2018. But it's hard because it's not a classroom-based sampling procedure. Mm-hmm. It's a school sampling procedure. Now, the TIMSS, on the other hand, is classroom-based. And they do have teacher questionnaires. And those teacher questionnaires are actually pretty useful. And you can, even though they're self-reported, you can tell some stuff about them. There seems to be some relationship between what the teachers report they're doing and the student outcomes. So, economists and sociologists and everybody else just love data. And one thing you can say is that these tests have produced tons of data over years, you know. So, there's two sides to the argument. We love the data, but we know that there are real problems with it. And we particularly know there are real problems the way they're used in order to convince people that some things are good in education and other things are not good in education. And they really jump to conclusions which are not evidenced by their data.
I think we're going to need to hear more about this when we come back. This is Schools In with Dan Schwartz and Denise Pope. We will have more with Martin Carnoy and charter schools and voucher and school choice next on SiriusXM Insight 121.
You're listening to Schools In with Dan Schwartz and Denise Pope from the campus of Stanford University.
Welcome back to Schools In with Dan Schwartz and Denise Pope. We are talking with Martin Carnoy, labor economist here at the School of Education, covering lots of different topics, charters, vouchers, school choice, tests.
Yeah. So the career of psychologists, the psychologists who become Nobel laureates are the ones who challenge economists. So this is my bid right here.
Okay.
So I think the economists believe in market forces, not all economists, but I think education is a very tough place for market forces to operate. And one of the reasons is that the consumers have a very bad time judging learning. So like students in classes, it's hard for them to know they've learned. The only way they know they learn that we've set up is they take a test. And that's why everybody goes crazy about these tests, because it's sort of the only indicator they've got. So I don't know the rationality of a market system is not going to work if the consumer can't be a judge of the quality of the product they're buying. And so vouchers, those schools are unregulated and the consumers can't judge. Charter schools, a little more regulation so that the consumer's protected. So what do you think? Have I just taken down like the economics of education?
But wait, you sort of insulted parents, I think. I mean, you're basically saying you have no way of knowing.
I think this is everyone. I think it is very hard to judge whether something's good for learning and whether you've learned. The only way you know you've learned is by getting some benchmark that allows you to see it. You know, maybe you make more baskets. You know, that's sort of a rare case.
Maybe my kid is reading or not reading. I mean, as a parent, people will say, oh, I know when it's a good school or not. They'll say that. They might be wrong.
That is correct.
But Martin, what do you think?
I think I agree with Dan that parents do have I as a parent had kids in school, and I could tell whether a teacher was really bad or really great. But there's the 75% in between are pretty hard to judge. And I agree with him on that. And I think it is an information problem. And we know that most people think their school is great and that the school system is terrible. That's the sort
right.
of the polls.
I saw that. You grade, you give your own school a grade, and then you also grade the school system. And
right.
your own school, you give like A minus or B plus, but the school system is like a C or a D.
Yeah.
I've seen that poll that you're talking about.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Right? And that's repeated polls. So the tests are a measure for parents of particularly gains on the test. Are a measure for parents of what's happening. And I've seen this in Texas with community organizers using test scores to basically organize parents around low-income parents to pressure the schools in various ways. So the tests can be helpful in
right.
accountability. The issue about choice is I think the educational system is a very difficult thing to marketize because unlike many other industries, it's very, very few people really know how to increase productivity in education. It's a very limited group of people that know how to do this. Mm-hmm. And, you know, and they appear. There are principals, they're great principals, and there are great groups of teachers that do this. But it's a very rare commodity. So the question is, how then do you improve the educational system? Let me start with this. The public school system in the United States has, according to the test scores, improved enormously in the past 25 years, particularly in math. The gains have been very large on the national test. They've tapered off a little bit more recently, but still, these are huge gains. And interestingly enough, Martin West at Harvard, who's a very conservative economist and a big proponent of vouchers and charters, in explaining why the most recent voucher systems in this Midwestern state, I think it's Ohio or Indiana, and Louisiana, that the results are very negative for the kids in the voucher schools compared to their counterparts in the public schools. And he explains this, maybe these recent voucher plans are doing so badly because the public school system has improved so much that now privatizing the schools. That's a very interesting statement because it tells you that the vouchers and charters had nothing to do with the improvement of the public school system.
Right.
I don't think any people have analyzed exactly why the public school system improved, but it has improved from the tests. So why do people consider that the American school system is in so much trouble when there are some states that aren't doing so well, by the way, like Arizona and Michigan, with lots of charter schools? They have not made many gains over the past 20 years, while other states are doing terrific. And many states are doing terrific. And so the question is, why do people have such a low opinion? And I think it's a political thing that keep pushing this. If you're a conservative, keep pushing that the public school system stinks because that way you don't have to pay teachers more. That way you don't have to really talk about the greatness of the public sector and what it can do. And instead, what you want to do is say the only way we can do this is privatize it. And in privatizing, you give force to religious groups that want to basically have their schools subsidized and all these other factors that get in there. So on the whole, I want to get to a larger question, whether any of this really can solve the problems of America today, the political and economic problems of America today and the great inequality.
Okay, answer that.
Well, I think it's a major question of our time. I really doubt that education can do this. And yet, everybody keeps pointing their fingers at education, saying it's education that has to solve this for us. And I just think that's not true.
So that's sort of like assuming business schools will solve the problem of corruption.
Exactly.
That somehow that's there's a mismatch there.
Right. And I think it's very nice to point, you know, you can look at what Horace Mann said that everybody should – I mean, I don't think you have to say that education solves economic and social problems to say we want better education. I mean, you can
let's just get better literacy in our
country.
Yeah,
you can just have better literacy. You can have better education. I'm not even sure that more education solves political problems. Unless it's a kind of education like Sam Weinberg does, which really consciously tries to increase tolerance, consciously tries to do things. Just more education does not make people love each other more. Okay. In fact, you could argue it makes them more competitive with each other, if, particularly if the jobs aren't appearing. So people have to struggle to get better jobs and get more income, et cetera.
Okay. This is fascinating. It's not where I thought we were going
to
go.
Well, I'm trying to decide, should I be depressed or not?
I'm happy that we don't have to have education be the be-all, solve-all panacea for everything. But I'm sort of sad because I kind of got into this job thinking that's when education is a lever to solve social change.
Yeah.
So
well, it is a vehicle for social change. But the fact is that there are other forces that also are very powerful that are working against this. For example, regional inequality. Regional inequality is a very powerful force. Industries leaving, very powerful force. Public sector decline. Public sector used to be a great source of mobility for low-income people and working-class people to work in the public sectors, teachers, et cetera, professionals. And now the public sector is way down. So that source of mobility is gone too. So these forces on top of – you can't blame education for these other forces. That's the point. And nobody's talking about these other forces because these other forces – like segregation and racism and social inequality are overwhelming.
Okay, so you wrap it up, Denise, but I think the summary here is that education's necessary, but it's not sufficient.
Agreed, and we're going to have Martin back to solve the rest of those problems. Thank you, Martin, for being with us, and thank you, everyone, for listening to Schools In with Dan Schwartz and Denise Pope. If you missed any of this episode, listen anytime on demand with the SiriusXM app or on SoundCloud.